I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Richard Kripe from the Coeur d'Alene chapter of the Audubon Society. We're talking about birding in northern Idaho. This is going to be fun, Peter.
You know, with our wetlands project, when that comes in, the bird species, not only just shorebirds, wading, but songbirds are going to be crazy cool. And this will be a fun episode.
I'm a big fan of birds. Now, I'm not a big birder myself, but I pay attention to them, especially in the spring when they start coming back. You know, you can always sense the seasons are going to change by just paying attention to what the birds are doing. And of course, as a paleontologist, I like to remind everyone that dinosaurs didn't go away. They are birds, and the most amazing creatures on this planet, to me, are the birds. They're just absolutely fantastic. We'll get into that in a little bit, but first, I think you got some nature news for us.
We have got some nature news. The Paris Zoo just unveiled a new exhibit for the Physarum polycephalum.
Wow.
Or slime mold.
Yay, slime mold.
Slime mold. And slime mold is insanely insane.
Uh-huh.
It is not a fungi.
Okay.
It's not a plant. It's not an animal.
What is it?
They label it as a protist.
It's a protist. Okay.
And if you want a more accurate scientific term for a protist, it is something we really don't understand.
Great.
Yes.
Does it do a tricks or anything?
You know, with this, they're finding out that it does do tricks. It's a single-celled organism with millions of nuclei that kind of creep along the ground. Think of The Blob, that classic sci-fi movie with Steve McQueen.
All right.
This is kind of like a slime mold. And, you know, it doesn't have a mouth. It doesn't have much of anything. Or a stomach, but it loves to eat bacteria and other stuff. They just kind of creep over it and suck it up, I guess.
Huh.
What they're finding out is that they really think slime molds have a very primitive form of thinking. They've put them in these mazes where there's food at the beginning and food at the end, and they'll find their way through the maze, and they will never backtrack where they went. And they're hypothesizing that, you know, they leave a slime trail and it's kind of like a marker. So they won't go over a trail that they just put in.
That's pretty clever.
These things are insane.
So if we go to the Paris Zoo, I've been to the Paris Zoo, I think even last summer.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have this on display. So I'm trying to imagine what you do when you're looking at the slime mold. Does it move fast?
It doesn't really move fast. No, where you're gonna see kind of like an exhibit that looks like a forest floor with this kind of yellowish green goo on the bottom, on the ground. Keepers at the Paris Zoo say that their slime mold really loves oatmeal.
That's great. I love it. Well, you know, all creatures great and small.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And even the smallest can be the greatest.
There we go. I love it. Well, today we are talking birds. And I'd be remiss if our trivia question didn't have to do with birds. What is the state bird of Idaho? Now, I know some of you are yelling at your radio right now because you know the answer, but I'm not going to give you the answer until after the break.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
All right, I want to welcome Richard Kripe. He's from the Coeur d'Alene chapter of the Audubon Society. So first off, thank you for joining the Nature of Idaho.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to participate.
So Richard, you're part of the Audubon Society, and we'll talk about it in a moment, but I understand that you are sitting at home by your window, and you can see some birds right now outside. What are you seeing?
Well, in the last few minutes, I've seen a downy woodpecker, a Steller's jay, a pygmy nuthatch, a red-breasted nuthatch, a black-capped chickadee, So it's been raining up here, so it's been dark and cold, but now the sun has come out, so the birds have come out, and they're making up for lost time at our feeder.
Have the squirrels come out as well?
Yeah, we don't have a problem with a squirrel at our feeder at the present. We have had in the past, but...
They're quite sneaky, those squirrels.
They have to eat, too, and they're very inventive.
Well, so you're in charge of the Coeur d'Alene chapter of the Audubon Society. I think most people have heard of the Audubon Society, but could you tell us a little bit about what that society does and what Coeur d'Alene chapter in particular? What do you guys do?
Well, National Audubon Society is a conservation organization that was started 140 years ago or so, with a specific concern upon conservation of birds. I don't know if your listeners know that previous generations of folks like to go out with their shotguns and just shoot birds just for the heck of it, like with the passenger pigeon that suddenly disappeared. There was a concern about the long-term health and survival of all birds. So Audubon Society was started to educate the public and to advocate for conservation efforts on a national level. There are a network of chapters throughout the country that have the same mission at the local level. So we are members of the National Audubon Society, but we are the local chapter. And we have about 130 dues-paying members here, with a number beyond that of people who are interested and participate in some of our activities.
So how long have you been involved with the Coeur d'Alene chapter?
Well, I've been up here about 20 years, so it was one of the first things I did, my wife and I, when we moved back up here. We were living in Denver, and I became involved in the Audubon organization. I think I got into birding as an extension of hiking. Colorado is a wonderful place for hiking. And hiking through the high country there were any number of raptors, and I'd see a hawk sailing and wonder what that was and what I could learn about it. So I got interested in observing birds and identifying birds and learning about birds as an extension of my hiking and camping in the Colorado mountains.
That's great. You know, our show, Nature of Idaho, deals with everything outside, and it's just a wonderful way of inspiring and encouraging people to get out and be active in their environment, whether it's hiking, whether it's birding, skiing, just using and respecting the nature of Idaho.
Well, I find birds a fascinating subject because they're everywhere. When you start paying attention, I suppose you see that not only are they everywhere, but once you start learning the different kinds, there's quite a diversity, even in town, that you can observe. And you don't have to go too far to start recognizing different sorts, and that they have seasonality to them and they change over time. And of course, they each have their own life cycle. And there's quite a lot to observe in them that informs us about the world around us. And they're always there.
One of the things we do is participate in the Christmas bird count. And one of our areas is right in the city of Coeur d'Alene, but including the shores of the lake and the river. So sometime in the middle of December, we'll go out and on a Saturday and starting at the crack of dawn and extending till we can't see anymore, count all the numbers and variety of species that we can see here in the dead of winter in the city and immediately outside it.
So the Christmas bird count really is kind of the the forerunner to citizen science. And can you kind of tell how you, with the Audubon Society, really incorporate the concept of citizen science with your bird surveys?
With this preserved bird count, we report into a national database along with other organizations around the country. This information is collected so that there is a pattern. They can see patterns over the years, and I think it was this kind of information that enabled them to make some knowledgeable guesses about the decline in the total number of birds. But we have some other studies. Micah Bay is a nearby bay of Lake Coeur d'Alene. And once a month, we go out and spend a morning in a specific area. We take the same route, stop at the same places every month of the year, and have been doing this for years, and just observe what can we see, what's there, how many, what species, and we report that in. And again, it's a way to get outside, to be outside, to be thinking and watching what's happening around you, regardless of the season.
In your 20 years here, have you seen any drastic changes within your survey and the bird species?
No. There are fluctuations. And we may be starting to show some long-term trends, but we cannot honestly say there are any dramatic changes.
That's a plus, most definitely. What other conservation projects are you guys involved in?
Well, we have a number of birdhouses that we regularly monitor. Oh, here comes the Stellar's Jay again. He just flew in.
This is so much better than TV, ladies and gentlemen. Get yourself a birdhouse or four or five.
Yeah, he's up there on the suet. He's going to work on the suet. We have a trail of 50 birdhouses. We call it the Bluebird Trail, and it attracts bluebirds, also swallows. And through the summer, we visit that weekly and track the success of the breeding and how many chicks were hatched and fledged as an effort to promote specifically bluebirds. And we have other areas that we call significant birding areas that usually one or two members will decide that they will take on that specific area and be responsible for visiting it regularly and observing what's happening.
When folks go out to do these surveys, what kind of equipment are they bringing with them?
Spotting scopes mostly, and binoculars. In the summer, people have these apps on their phone that will emit bird calls, and they can see if they can get a response. Or they'll also use it to see if they can match it with what they're hearing to make a clear identification by ear. Basically, spotting scopes and binoculars.
There are so many birds. There are so many, many birds. And I can think of, you know, maybe the colorful ones or the large ones, and I can identify those. And then there's many of these smaller brown birds that all, to my expert eye, kind of all look the same. So how does one start learning and discerning these different
types? We call them LBGs, little brown guys.
How do you break into that world of being able to expertly tell these different animals apart?
It is a very complicated and extensive problem, and most of us will say we are not expert. Because we're constantly up against birds that we cannot identify.
Right.
Specifically, we can often get the family the type of bird it is, but we can't get the specific species. A good example is gulls. Now, gulls are very common. Up here, we primarily get the ring-billed gull, but through the winter in particular, we'll get a variety of gulls. Then come spring and summer, gulls don't look the same until they're about 3 years old. So you get first-year gulls and second-year gulls, as well as males and females. And you can identify the mature gulls, but you look at the juvenile gulls and you don't know, you can't tell what they are because they haven't come out with their distinctive markings. So, but there are people who can, and there are people who may can develop the expertise by just the profile, the confirmation of the bird and the specifics in the pattern. Even though they're juveniles, they can distinguish them. So you're always around people that are much more expert than you are in certain areas. And I do not bird by ear. I never learned to do that. And now I'm past the time when I can do that. But you get folks that are very expert. They don't need to see the bird. They just need to hear it. And each bird's song is very distinctive.
So when I was a young lad in the 70s, I didn't see a whole lot of raptors. And that was, we were still having the effects of DDT. And
oh, exactly. Yes.
Yes. And now I think we kind of mentioned this before, prior to the show, there's been multiple articles coming out that we've had a significant loss of birds since the 70s, and it's not necessarily raptors.
Yes, and that study showed that eagles and osprey and so on were not among those that, in fact, their numbers are still increasing, as well as most of the game birds, the ducks and geese. Their numbers are increasing, doing well. But I agree with you. I don't think I saw an eagle until I was about 35 years old, sometime in the 70s.
This notion that since the 70s, one-third of all birds have disappeared in North America is sort of a staggering realization. And I guess what's happening? What's really changing over time to lead to this huge number of population loss?
Well, it's loss of habitat primarily. We have an area called the Rathdrum Prairie, which is just west of here, north of Post Falls, south of Rathdrum, west of Coeur d'Alene, and east of Spokane Valley. It's a prairie area that has been agricultural, but it's filling in with the growth of all the communities here and people coming in there, building houses out there, and it's changing. Now, it had been a favorite place for looking for raptors. There would be any number of hawks and owls that could be spotted out there, but it's getting harder and harder because their food supply is diminishing. That is, as the ground is turned into asphalt and lawns, there are no more moles and voles and mice and whatnot that they live on. So they move elsewhere, if there's somewhere else to move.
If there's somewhere else to go. And, you know, when we look at conservation efforts, we want to look for umbrella species and these big mega vertebrate-type animals because it's hard to really encourage and entice people to conserve if we're trying to work with the LBG guys, the little brown guys. You know, you want to try to find some of these charismatic species that need this entire habitat to bring awareness to the loss of habitat, which then moves into some of these smaller birds. With your Coeur d'Alene chapter, are you reaching out and looking at some educational programs to help with these conservation efforts?
We have a fairly extensive program in the public schools. They put together a little show and go to elementary classrooms to talk about birds, talk about show them bird eggs, bird nests, give them an idea of the range of birds with a focus on the small songbirds, then how to look for them and the concern. It is the migratory songbirds that are probably the most worrisome because of loss of habitat. And part of that is the cavity dwellers look for holes in trees, but they need mature trees, and that is getting more and more difficult. And the ground nesting birds need untouched ground. A lot of the sparrows and similar birds will nest on the ground, and as it gets all plowed up, there it just is not a nesting place. So loss of habitat is the primary thing. The other is the use of pesticides, insecticides, because many of these birds eat insects. And if the insect population is declining, then the food supply is declining, and they cannot support themselves at the same numbers. So these are the two primary forces that we see. And I mentioned our birdhouse program. This is to provide some level of habitat for nesting for birds like bluebirds. It's a very small gesture, but every little bit helps.
For sure. And we encourage folks doing that in their homes and their properties if they can help support the bird population where we live, you know, that every little bit helps.
Yeah. I'll put up some bird nests on trees around your house, and put up some feeders, and then enjoy the show.
Well, it sounds like you have a show going outside your window right now, which is pretty darn awesome.
Yeah. Well, right now there's nobody here, but they've been coming and going.
That's just it. If you wait long enough, they'll be right back.
They will
enjoying
will
the suet.
They're on a commercial break.
That's right. They need a break from being busy too. Well, so that takes us to our trivia question I started the show with, which is, what is the state bird of Idaho? Richard, could you help us out with that?
Well, the state bird of Idaho is the mountain bluebird.
The mountain bluebird.
The mountain bluebird is a beautiful bird. It's a pale blue. It's unusual among birds in its coloration. It is found in the higher elevation. Rarely would be seen in towns, although we do see it out in the fields during the summer and fall, but mostly you will see it in higher elevations.
It's always a bird that's a fun one to see.
It's a unique bird, and I think it's does not have a very wide distribution. So it's a great state bird for Idaho.
Right, Idaho is a unique state, and we need a unique state bird. We want to thank Richard Kripe for joining us today. To learn more about the Coeur d'Alene chapter of the Audubon Society, please visit their website, cdaaudubon.org.
Very good. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at kisu.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock, and please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.